Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with Episode 44 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Location, 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 which is the answer to the question, what's the best way to analyze variety performance? This podcast is a continuation of my recent conversation with Ryan Higginbotham, the man in charge of Washington State University's variety testing program. In this episode, Higginbotham provides an overview of the winter wheat nursery trial data based on production zones. Before I get to that, however, I'd like to remind everyone that the variety testing program, which I'll call VTP, is funded in part by an annual $175,000 contribution from the Washington Grain Commission. There's a lot of important projects we fund at the Commission, research initiatives, marketing ventures, and educational programs like Wheat All About It. But when it comes to touching farmers and influencing their decisions, the VTP is arguably the WGC's most important budget line item. The information Higginbotham's program gathers has become even more powerful in combination with the variety selection tool that the small grains team at WSU has created based on how varieties perform in various regions and other parameters including soil type and disease ratings. If you haven't used the variety selection tool, go to smallgrains.wsu.edu to find out if the variety you're growing is the one, backed by science, that you should be growing. For those who have already used the tool, check it out again, as it has recently been upgraded with more current disease ratings. Once again, go to smallgrains, one word, .wsu.edu. Don't leave bushels on the table! Although Higginbotham discourages farmers from making decisions about varieties based on 1 year's data, it's the rare individual who doesn't look at the top performer in a given season. I asked Higginbotham to run through the best performers in what was a wacky year.
Yeah, I think a good way to do that would be to look across a given precipitation zone. And, you know, this year those precipitation zones are sort of out the window because places like Lind, you know, is in my less than 12-inch rainfall zone. But this year, I think at the station, they were pushing 15 inches. So it's a little bit of a different year to look at. But that's how I go about it, is to look across a given precipitation zone. You know, obviously, if you're an individual farmer and the trial is on your farm, then I would probably just look at that particular trial location, you know, see how things did this year, but more importantly, look long term. 1 year is about as useless of trial results as you can get. It's nice information, but in terms of predicting future performance, it's not the most powerful tool. The best thing to do would be to look at multiple years or multiple locations and see how things perform over years and locations to capture those high production years and low production years. So we're seeing how things perform over different environments. And then that gives you a much better idea of, okay, if I look at a five-year average at a given precipitation zone, this is going to tell me how these varieties really handle the ups and downs of production years. So that's how I would go about it, is to look at a long-term average. If I were a farmer trying to figure out what to plant, I'd look at a long-term average across multiple locations and see how things stack up.
And what about L10? L10, which was released in 1992, is still out there, still being planted. You still have it in your plot work?
Yeah, and L10 is going to be one of those ones that I don't foresee a day when we get rid of it. That day might come in my career, but there's value in having a variety that's been around for so long and planted for so many years. You know, it's great for folks who want to access my data and do some sort of larger analysis where they're comparing years and climates and environments, and to have something that's been in there consistently is really valuable. So I don't foresee getting rid of L10 in the lower rainfall trial, just like I don't foresee getting rid of Madsen in the high rainfall trial, because Madsen's sort of the high rainfall equivalent. Not a ton of acres still of it, but it still is being grown out there in some places. A lot of the varieties that people are currently growing have some Madsen in their pedigrees, you know, that could be traced back to some of that. So again, it's useful to be able to have that in there to see how do things perform over a long-term number of years.
But isn't it true that those farmers who are growing Madsen are leaving yield on the table?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think you can look at trial results and dispute that. I think that some of these older varieties are certainly being outperformed by the newer, more competitive genotypes that have been released. And some of that's due to disease resistances. Some of it's just due to subtle nuances in the plants that can take advantage of more moisture or different climates. But yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that some of these older lines are getting beaten year after year. Some people like them because it's consistent and they know how to grow it. I asked a farmer one time who was still growing Stevens, so why are you continuing to grow Stevens when there certainly are other lines out there that will beat Stevens? And his response was, because I know how to grow it. So it didn't matter to him that he could get more yield. He knew how to grow Stevens, and he was comfortable growing Stevens, and he didn't want to make a change. Some of the folks who are still growing these older lines, like an Eltan or a Madsen, you know, maybe they want to grow it because they can save seed. And so there are some places where that might make sense, where they're farming in the margins, and they're trying to cut every cost they possibly can. And so saving seed is one of those tools that they want to be able to use. You know, I still think that they're sacrificing some yield potential in given years, but to them, financially, it pencils out, and you know, I don't blame them for that.
So in the drier areas, how are Otto and Jasper stacking up against the other varieties?
In the real low rainfall, Otto is still a good choice. It didn't have a tremendous year this year. It didn't top a lot of trials. You know, I think those Eltan types, you know, so the Eltan, Otto, Curiosity, Mila, you know, they didn't do as well this year. I don't think they you know, they're bred and selected for a low rainfall, and that's where they're going to thrive. In a year like, say, 2015, I'm sure they did really well because that's how they were bred and where they were selected. A year like this with lots of moisture, they're just not really intended for that. So they're a low rainfall wheat, and so some of these other intermediate to higher rainfall varieties did a lot better than it's something like an Otto in that low rainfall. Now, it's still a good standard choice. You know, it offers a lot of different protections from diseases. And, you know, when a person plants, they don't know how much rainfall we're going to get the next year. So they're hedging their bets and they're planting something that's intended for their production area.
Let's go through the various precipitation zones and tell me, I know that you're saying that one year doesn't make a difference, but people are still interested in what tops the charts in one year.
Well, if I open up my file here with my over 20 inch precipitation soft white winter trial, so I'm looking at results just from this year, which, you know, again, is not the best predictor of future performance, but that's what people want to look at. You know, Roslyn still was right towards the top, followed closely by Norwest Tandem and Norwest Duet, and then there's Zerfa still hanging around. So, you know, a lot of folks have some negative things to say about Zerfa, but it still yields well. Jasper was right up there. S.Y. Dayton is a new one from Syngenta, and then followed by S.Y. Assure. So those were all in the top LSD group, and what I mean is they weren't significantly different from the highest yielder. So if the top yielder was Roslyn, none of those other varieties that I just rattled off were any different statistically than Roslyn.
And Roslyn is from which program?
That's an Oregon State release. It's been out for a few years now. There's not a ton of acres. It has tremendous yield potential, has had a great 2 years in a row. I think it's probably piqued some interest, and I think we'll see some seed available of that this fall in certain areas.
So is that generally down in the Walla Walla area then?
I think that was probably its original fit. It's moved further north. You know, I can't seem to find a weakness on it. You know, people ask me about it, and I say, well, it's done well several years in a row. It's got a good long-term average. Great disease package. You know, it is an Oregon State variety, and historically Oregon State varieties don't have the best winter hardiness out there, but Roslyn has survived the last three, four, five winters. It's certainly in the higher rainfall zones. Now, I don't think it's a low rainfall wheat. I think it's going to be a Palouse, you know, Oregon-Idaho border down into the Walla Walla-Dayton area is going to be a good fit for that one.
All right, let's go down to the next precipitation zone. So now we're looking at the 16 to 20 inch precipitation zone, and what do we have here?
So some of the same players, again, Roslyn topped that precipitation zone this year. You know, Bobtail, S.Y. Dayton, LCS Art Deco, Norwest Tandem, You know, Roslyn was statistically higher yielding than any of those other ones I just listed. SY Raptor is a new one. SY Ovation closely behind. So a lot of varieties stacking up right behind Roslyn. You know, any of those I think would be a good choice. Some of those are new and it'd be hard to get some seed of. You know, like Norwest Tandem is just coming on the market. SY Raptor is just coming on the market. So those are going to be a little harder to come by. But, you know, certainly next fall, they should be widely available.
And how long does it usually take to build up seed? You know, I write stories about the release of varieties in X year, but then the growers, it seems, don't actually have access to them until 3 years later.
That's one of the most frustrating things, to stand at a field day and talk about a variety that has all these great characteristics and has been yielding well for a couple of years, but yet it's still 2 or 3 years away from being able to be planted by a farmer. And so it depends on how the particular program has done their seed increase. So if they have begun that process prior to entering a variety into my trials, then it might be available the year after I test it. You know, if they give it to me and then it gets a name the next year and then they start with the breeder seed and then foundation seed, you know, you could be looking at 4 years before it's widely available.
Okay, let's go to the next precipitation zone. Now we're looking at the 12 to 16 inch precipitation zone, and Jasper is topping the list there.
Yeah, and the yields here in this 12 to 16 inch zone don't really reflect a typical 12 to 16 inch zone yield. We had some pretty high yielding locations in that zone this year. This is one where Reardon, you know, topped Reardon and Creston topped in terms of overall yield for these locations. And Reardon, just as a side note, was just added to this precipitation zone last year, so this would be its second year as I classified in this 12 to 16 inch zone. But yeah, Jasper topped that precipitation zone. It was not significantly different than Norwest Duet or Norwest Tandem or SY Banks. And then followed closely by Westbred 1783. So of those, 1783 is a new Westbred line, pretty broadly adapted, should be available, maybe a limited supply this fall and then certainly next fall. SY Banks fits that same bill, a new release from them. Norwest Tandem, again, not a lot of seed this fall. Norwest Duet now should be pretty widely available this fall, and I expect that the other ones will be widely available next year.
When I started in agriculture in 1986, it was like you had one variety that just covered the gamut. I mean, at one point it was Matson, at another point it was L10, a million acres. But nowadays they're very much more segmented. Why is that?
I think there's just more competition. You know, back in those days, you know, ignorance was bliss. They didn't know what they were missing. And now with so many people trying to breed and release wheat varieties for Washington and the broader Pacific Northwest, there are so many options. And there are certain places where a variety might do well on my farm, but if you farm 10 miles away, it just doesn't seem to do as well on your farm. And that's what makes it hard, is trying to figure out, okay, where is this one going to fit? And it's, I don't think there are some varieties that just flat are not going to do well in a certain environment. And I think we can pick those ones out. It's trying to decipher between good and best is where the challenge is. There are some lines that will do just fine, but there's probably another one that will be best.
I'm curious whether it would be better off for farmers to look for that middle of the road path rather than to be looking for the high.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. You're probably much better off long term if you choose a variety that is consistent. Maybe it doesn't top the trial in any given year, but it's never at the bottom. What you want to avoid is those ones that are a home run 1 year, but the next year are way at the bottom. Yeah, you capitalize on that 1 year, but you don't sleep very well on a year where it was at the bottom. So you want something that's consistent across years and environments, and try not to go after the next home run.
Now, we don't have a lot of time to go through everything, but I'm curious about the DNS. There's lots of interest in DNS. How did the Hard Red Springs perform this year?
Well, we don't have all the results processed yet. You know, we harvest a location, and with our new weigh system on the combine, I can look at the yield results right away, but we don't have protein, you know, until we run everything through the processing line. And we've been so focused on getting winter wheat results conquered that it's been hard to focus too much on the spring. So I don't have much information on, in terms of how varieties performed. You know, I think planting date was probably the biggest issue with spring wheat this year. If you were able to get in at a reasonably normal time, your yields were probably okay. And, you know, if you were delayed because of moisture, I think it suffered because it was just so hot and so dry after planting.
I heard this year that in some cases the nitrogen, because of all the moisture we had, actually went below where the roots could capture it. Did you have any of that problem with your plots?
Well, we soil sample everything in the spring, and so we added some additional nitrogen to several locations based on those results and the yield goal and sort of what is recommended in terms of a nitrogen per bushel, pounds of nitrogen per bushel yield. So we added some extra fertilizer to locations to try and make sure we had enough in the profile. You know, did it help? Some places it probably did, some places it didn't. You know, at that point in time, we didn't know that the rain was going to quit and we wouldn't get another drop for the next 6 weeks. You know, so you have to manage based on what the information you have at that time. And so in some of those places, the information told us we needed more fertilizer and we added some additional.
Are you out planting right now?
Yeah, we started this week. We started this week. The first location went in the ground on Monday. We did done three more this week and I'm hopeful to get in three or four next week as well.
Now, are these in the drier areas, and how deep are you planting? How are you planting?
Yeah, we always start in the driest areas, so Lind, Ritzville, Connell, St. Andrews, those are always our first ones planted, followed closely by Harrington, Lamont, Elmira, Creston, you know, sort of up in that Highway 2 area. And we're starting with our deep furrow drill with the split packers, and moisture is pretty good. You know, it depends based on the area and based on the field. You know, I wasn't out planting, so I don't know how deep it was after we ran the planter through, but when I went and flagged out and shows the locations, you know, moisture ranged anywhere from 4.5 to 5 inches down from the soil surface all the way, you know, to right towards the top couple inches, you know, so pretty decent planting conditions overall.
That's amazing, given the fact that we haven't had any rain for so long, but we had so much in before that.
Yeah, that's the miracle of summer fallow. That's why they do it, because it conserves that moisture for the next crop. And, you know, if you do it well, whether it's no-till fallow or traditional, you know, tilled fallow, you know, that moisture stays available for planting.
You know, I've always thought that we ought to look at the wheat industry as part of a system with all of these other alternative crops that we have. I'm curious, do you look at how the crop performs based on where you are planting these plots?
So do you mean do I evaluate how it performs based on the rotation that we're in or the previous crop?
That is what I mean exactly.
It's not something that I'm, you know, trying to tease out statistically or trying to be able to say, okay, in this given area, when we follow X crop, you know, we see a benefit. I think it would be difficult for me to do because we're bouncing around in rotations. You know, what I don't want to do is do anything that's really outside the norm, you know, so I don't want to follow things that nobody's growing. You know, if it's widely adapted and a common practice, you know, then it makes sense for me to plant plots in that rotation. But no, we're not really trying to evaluate how things do following a given previous crop.
There are lots of places to get information on the VTP, but one of the best is also at the Small Grain website at smallgrains.wsu.edu. Click on Variety Selection and Testing. As you just heard, Higginbotham and I didn't talk much about spring wheat in the podcast because the data still hadn't been crunched. Overall, it was a rough year for the spring crop, but Higginbotham did have an observation that may change spring wheat's orientation and perhaps even what we call it. More and more hard red spring wheat, which is commonly called dark northern spring, or the abbreviation DNS, is being planted by irrigated growers during the fall or winter. Although Higginbotham's program isn't currently planting hard red spring wheat in the fall or winter, something the industry is calling facultative planting, he concedes the time may come when his technicians are wearing parkas and snow boots to plant spring wheat. For now, he's working with Syngenta to test some of their facultative spring varieties planted in a plot adjacent to WSU's Moses Lake Irrigated Nursery. Although the WGC funds the VTP, The folks who really make the program a success are the farmer cooperators who provide WSU with a half acre of their land every year. There are 35 cooperators, and in a couple of cases, Higginbotham is working with the third generation. One last thing. Occasionally, numbered lines in the VTP are released and named in the interval between harvesting plots, analyzing the data, and getting it published, in which case it's difficult to identify the line in question. That happened a couple of times already. Two Lima grain varieties fall in that category, LCS Hulk and LCS Sonic. And that brings us to the end of episode 44, or what I called Location, 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 which is the answer to the question, what's the best way to analyze variety performance? Hope you enjoyed the show and will join me again next time for another episode of Weed All About It.
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.